Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Rootscast. I'm Jeff Daverman, the creator of Root Concepts, owner of Infamous Network, and we are here discussing the ideas behind Root Concepts and how it applies to the lives of our fan base, the people that we work with, the folks who love what we do and want to use our artwork to express themselves and succeed in their own artistic endeavors.
Hi, this is Danny Fisher. You're tuning in to Rootscast podcast with Jeff Daverman, and today his guest is Jacob Devaney. Apparently they've been friends for a super long time and have both done a whole bunch of good stuff here in Prescott with the community. How long have you guys known each other?
Yeah, thanks a lot, Danny. It's great to have Jacob here because it's true. I have known Jacob over 20 years. We met pretty close to when I first moved to Prescott. You already living here, Jacob? How you doing today?
I was already living here when we first met. But you know, actually, Prescott's a great place, but our work is really stretched way beyond the bounds of this town. In a lot of ways, we're here, but probably a lot more people know about what we do everywhere but here. We're kind of, we're kind of hiding out in a certain regard for Prescott.
Are you talking about Unify, or are you talking about other adventures?
I think, well, for my own work, but also for Jeff's work. I travel the country a lot, and a lot of the times I'll be hundreds or thousands of miles away, and I'll see a car with one of Jeff's stickers on the bumper. Or I'll be in a health food store and I'll see one of his carousels of stickers. Or I'll be in a coffee shop and somebody will walk in wearing one of his t-shirts. And to me, that's amazing. You know, of course, I always think, wow, you know, that's my buddy Jeff. But then there is that little bit of that kind of, wow, that's coming from this little podunk town in the mountains of northern Arizona that's surprisingly creative. With a lot of, you know, just a lot of very creative people here doing great work. So, yeah.
So I think it was probably the late fall of 94 when I first met Jacob. And we've come a long way in the last, over 20 years, 22 years. We've had it's been really interesting because we've both lived here for pretty much the whole time. And we've had a pretty parallel path in try and put creative ideas out in the world as independent artists. And I've been inspired by what Jacob has been doing pretty much the whole time I've known him, because he has such a huge imagination. He's always thinking of the next thing, coming up with the next vision and the next collaboration. And so it's been really interesting to have a perspective that I have here watching him do what he's been doing over the last 20 years, which is an entire myriad of different skill sets and creative aspects of putting conscious evolution, contributing to conscious evolution, putting that in the world. So way back in the day, right, when we were first hanging out, Jacob had this entire ensemble, right? I mean, when I first met you, you were working and collaborating with an entire ensemble of artists and musicians that you called the Mother Ceiling Circus, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so can you just talk about that a little bit? Because that to me was, a real inspiration to me back in the late 90s and when we were getting started as well.
Well, you know, I was coming out of college. I was very inspired by the Grateful Dead. And it wasn't just the music, really. It was this whole carnival that grew up out in the parking lot, and really ultimately what it is in a lot of ways still is entrepreneurship. These were people, whether it was somebody that was set up with a Coleman stove selling grilled cheese, or somebody that made a bunch of tie dyes or stickers or whatever. These were young people that got a creative idea and found an audience in a place that they could sell it. And they used the proceeds of their you know, their wares to be able to travel around and have fun all summer long with the Grateful Dead. And I just thought that was amazing. So in that inspiration was the sense of a larger creative community and how important that is to the world. And then within that is the sense of what capitalism has really distanced us from, a sense of community and a kind of tribal sense of, you know, being one with each other, being interconnected, supporting each other.
Not competing.
Yeah. Raising each other up, all that stuff. So, so I, you know, at that point, Jerry Garcia and the Dead had been around forever. And so I felt like, you know, I'm young and my generation is going to need something like this. And the Dead probably isn't going to be around forever. So I, you know, I just realized that, the best way to teach people something is through joy and color and creativity and love and having a good time. So I get the idea of, it wasn't just my idea, it was me and a couple friends, we threw thoughts around of a circus that was kind of educational in nature. So of course it would have components of, you know, we would always say, take the best parts of what the Grateful Dead scene was, not just the band itself, the whole larger scene, and further that, and then the less positive aspects, maybe some of the drug use or whatever that was also part of that scene, you know, to kind of encourage a more healthy lifestyle. So it was like a Chautauqua idea. Clowns and jugglers and stilt walkers and music and dancing, and then also like presentations on healthy living or environmental activism or things like that. So that was the idea, but it was really pretty disorganized. It was a lot of fun, but pretty disorganized. So that was right around when we met. That's what I was doing.
Well, you got to find that way, though. You saw the Dead parking lot, you knew what you want and didn't work, mm-hmm. and you had to find that way.
Mm-hmm. It was still inspiring to, you know, have it be something that did attract a group of people who were all doing really creative things. And even though it was kind of disorganized, when you look back at all of the people who participated in it, and you can kind of see what they all ended up doing, I think that everybody who participated in that will look back at that and say, that was a catalyst, that was a beautiful time that catalyzed my own inspiration to continue to go in the direction that I have gone in, because so many of those people continue to do creative things, continue to do music, continue to do writing, continue to do, you know, what was that, the seed at the heart of the Mother's Healing Circus, like what you just explained, you know, mm-hmm. Trying to bring this level of consciousness in a creative, artistic way. Mm-hmm. And it was a really neat thing to be around and to behold, and it definitely inspired myself and John, too. When we were getting started, you know, we were like, wow, you know, it's a bold thing to do what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, yeah, disorganized maybe, but
you streamline that
well, and just to even have the courage to be able to get up there and do it and put it out there. And you know, when you look at the talented people who are a part of that, again, it, you know, it was really neat to see it as it was happening.
It was something that emerged. It wasn't, you know, I mean, I definitely had my visions for it, and some of those happened and some of them didn't, but there was a lot of other individuals with visions for it, and some of their visions happened and some didn't. And that was the beauty. It was a group of friends that were willing to take a risk to do something crazy beautiful. And you know, I actually made a tribute website to it called aboxofsecrets.com, and tells a little bit of the history, and then it weaves into some of the kid stories that I've done and some of the other spin-off projects that I've been involved with over the years. But I think the beautiful thing about that is the notion of a collaboration.
Yep.
That you all go into something and nobody's really in charge. And sometimes that leads to disorganization. But it also is, that's how you collaborate. You know, we're really used to top-down ways of doing things. And really, so many great ideas occur when a group of people all get together and throw all their ideas in the hat. And things come out of that that would have never come out of any individual. That's synergy. So.
And here, 20 years later, you had time to process and pick and choose those parts of that, mm-hmm. and it grew again.
You know, something else that's really neat that came out of it, I think, is that you started taking it on the road a little bit and even connecting with different festivals, which you've continued to do now for a long time, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's all a thread, you know, coming out of those original ideas, isn't it?
It very much is. It's kind of funny when I look at, to me, I can see the invisible thread that connects everything I've done in my life. But from the outside, it might look like, wow, that guy is really erratic. He's doing all kinds of different things. And my writing today, the collaboration I'm doing with Unify, you know, the work that I do with Uplift Connect, you know, they're all the same ingredients. They're collaborations, they're about community, they're about raising the consciousness of the planet, joy. Yeah, spirituality is definitely part of that as well. Creativity.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your connections with Native Americans and the folks in New Orleans, and the kind of how you've been able to, you know, put together some ideas around, you know, the First Peoples and what's really resonated with you about mm-hmm. your connections with those people?
Well, you know, okay, so well, New Orleans and Native people, there's a very strong connection there because way back you had Seminole and Choctaw and Chickasaw and Creek, Cherokee, you know, all these Native tribes, particularly Seminole, I would say, in that region, that they recognized what was going on with slavery. So the local Native people a lot of times would raid the plantation to free the slaves. So there was this alliance created with first African Americans and Native Americans that goes way, way, way back. And obviously because the Natives and the Africans outnumbered the colonial people, you know, there was different laws made, you know, black people can't wear feathers or, you know, things like that. And so, because that represented the coming together of Native American and African American people. And so the way that they got around that was creativity. And they would work all year round doing very fancy bead patches that told a story and beautiful big headdresses. And these are descendants of, you know, they're mixed African and Indian. And so, you know, even the colonial people had given, I think it was to the Cherokee and the Seminole, they gave them African slaves. And the Indians just married them and had babies with them, yeah. You know. And it's like, well, you can't do that. You know, they're supposed to be your slaves. They're like, well, if they're ours, we can do whatever we want, right? So, you know, this, again, it's this collaboration. It's getting out of the insular universe of, you know, mixing things up. And so these descendants of this coming together of this alliance of the African and Indian created the most beautiful costumes, and they still do it to this day. And they would come out during Mardi Gras. So everybody would just think, oh yeah, those are people dressing up as Indians, but they don't realize that they actually are representing in a lineage of the, you know, the Africans and the Indians coming together and Native Americans coming together. So I was very, very much inspired by Carnival, very much in New Orleans, very much inspired also by jazz from New Orleans, which again, same theme, collaboration, people across different cultures, different backgrounds coming together with a common desire to create art and beauty and expression.
So I'm wondering if you could just speak for just a moment about your creative manifestations of that inspiration, the beadwork and things like that, because I know that that has been something that you've spent a lot of time learning and creating these immaculate costumes for yourself.
Well, yeah, the costumes aren't for me. They're for the characters, the clowns. And mm-hmm. I just, That is part of an oral tradition. You know, one of my great inspirations and teachers is a fellow by the name of Goat Carson. I call him my uncle. And he introduced me to Big Chief Tootie Montana. And the idea is when you sit and you do beadwork for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, that's a great time to sit and learn the stories and the oral history. And so there's a lot of histories that were not written on purpose. They were needed to be hidden. You know, there were Cherokee that, you know, when they got marched on the Trail of Tears, and then they told them, you know, now you got to sign up and be on the Dolls Indian Rolls so you can have your little card and say you're Indian. And there was, you know, the Cherokee said, forget that. We don't need the government that has oppressed our people and kicked us off our land to validate who we are now. We know who we are. So there were families who actively refused to be on the Dolls Indian Rolls that today are still Native, but they're not officially, you know, they don't get that tribal money from the casinos and whatnot now. And, you know, people, that's a very contested in a lot of circles. But, you know, there were reasons that people and families hid history, and there were reasons that people encoded it in art and expression that way. And so
the beadwork that you do for the costumes for the characters, mm-hmm. these are the characters that you take to these different festivals, and mm-hmm. and so what do the characters do at the festivals and with the beaded costumes and everything too? What are you trying to do with that?
You know, it's actually it's a ceremonial expression. It's a very, in a lot of ways, it's a very indigenous ritualistic expression that's found its way into modern festival scene. So we usually host the children's area and do a parade.
And so which festivals are these that you, that people could come and see the
characters? You know, the Telluride Bluegrass Festival, the High Sierra Music Festival, the Telluride Blues Festival. We do a great little event in Northern Arizona called Hullabaloo. We were at the Oregon Country Fair this year. I brought one of our Chinese dragons to Lightning in a Bottle this year. And so in addition to the costumes, we make big puppets that end up representing something, you know, either it's a queen bee and then it's this funny, cute queen bee that the kids love, but then we'll teach the kids about pollinator species and the importance of, you know, bees. And in the Sonoran Desert, we have bats that pollinate the cactus, and we have a ladybug parade, which ladybugs are not pollinators, they are predators, actually. They eat aphids and stuff. But so we use these characters, these giant puppets, the costumes as a way to teach kids about the interconnectedness of everything in nature. Or like this year, we had a Chinese dragon. A Chinese dragon represents mastery over the natural elements and manifestation. So, and then we tell these stories to kids, and we talk to kids about the importance of connecting with the trees, connecting with, you know, of course, kids that go out and play in the creek, you know, but to kind of push their imagination a little bit to say, you know, all of these things that surround us are alive. They're a part of us. We're a part of them. And so that's it. We do storytelling and then hand puppets and big giant puppets and stilt walkers and clowns. And, you know, it still has that same seed of what we were trying to do with the Mother Earth Healing Circus, although it's a lot more refined. And these festivals are very gracious to hire us and bring us and allow this cultural element to come through. And it is rooted in very ancient traditions. So
that's really neat that you have been able to do that now and continue to pass down all of this wisdom, and, you know, especially with, you know, what we were talking about a little bit earlier with all of those kind of stories. And so you're doing that for children on the West Coast here, kids who are coming to these festivals. It's probably a great place to be able to do that because it's already a festive atmosphere, mm-hmm. where a lot of folks are having a good time and very receptive to different things going on. And so that's part of what you're doing these days. But I'm wondering, I know that you're doing a lot of writing and have been doing that here for the last, several years at this point. Mm-hmm. And so you're reaching an adult audience as well as reaching a younger audience. And so I'm wondering if you could to talk about Unify a little bit and talk about some of the writing you're doing and what you're writing about, because I know that you put a lot of hard work into really trying to, you know, push consciousness in a way where, you know, you're doing your homework these days. So why don't you just speak to that a little bit?
Wow. You know, okay, so Unify, which is unify.org or facebook.com/unify, was basically a group of friends. One fellow in particular rounded us all up, Adil Kassam. And the idea was, everybody's talking about, you know, December 21st, 2012, the Mayan calendar and the end of the world. And we, our understanding of these, you know, so-called prophecies was not a doom and gloom. It was, we're coming into a birthing into a new time, a new world. And so the idea was to kind of co-opt all of the negative press and do something positive. Everybody wanted to say the end of the world is going to be that day. And we got the notion that we were going to say this is the beginning. So we organized a globally synchronized meditation. And we had people in Egypt for a festival there, and Stonehenge, Chichen Itza, Tulum, Tikal, Sedona, San Francisco, up on the Hopi Reservation, people all over. And we did a live cast online and watched the sun come up. And as far as I know, I mean, maybe it's been done, but it was really kind of, and here's the ritual aspect again, it was using this technology of the internet to host a globally synchronized ritual across cultures, across nations, different people everywhere. And the idea was to, at one point after we saw the sunrise at all these sacred sites around the world, was to host a moment of meditation synchronized all over the world. And the idea of that is, you know, there's a fellow by the name of David Nickel who is an expert on what he has termed subtle activism. But the idea being that there's another study about it called the Maharishi effect. When you have a whole bunch of people meditating at once, that it actually tends to calm the larger population around it. And there's a lot of studies around that, and I believe that it's true. And I think as we head into more and more transition that could be tumultuous on the planet, the more often that all of us all over the world can tune in at the same exact moment and send all that love and that good vibration and healing and peace to help us make this transition as smooth and gentle as possible.
So that's a pretty neat thing to be a part of, and you know, be there at the inception of that. And so, and that was 2012, and it's still going really strong, right? Like, tell me, like, kind of what the what's been going on over the last year or so.
Well, we do more than four global meditations per year, and we use our Facebook platform, which now has over 1 million fans. And we pick a theme. So the spring equinox is water. Water is life, love water. We have a lot of issues with our ocean. We have a lot of issues with fracking, contaminating groundwater. We have a lot of issues with drought. We have issues with tsunamis. We have a lot of things happening with water. And there's also research that indicates that water is conscious, and it will respond to the electrical vibrations that we emit when we focus our intention, I guess is a good way to put it. And so we do water for the spring equinox. Summer solstice is World Yoga Day. Yoga means union. So what a great time to have a globally synchronized meditation at the summer solstice. And that's also sacred, honoring Sacred Sites Day, which was declared by Orville Looking Horse, who is a Lakota pipe carrier, the white buffalo pipe carrier, who is bringing a lot of awareness to the importance of protecting sacred sites on the planet, which again has to do with our connection to the land. So then the fall is International Day of Peace, declared by the United Nations. So fall equinox, September 21, we do a globally synchronized meditation for peace. And we have other ones in between. We have our World Forgiveness Day on August 2nd, where we just encourage people. So we've become somewhat of a PR firm for so a lot of really cool events that people are doing everywhere. And because we've been very successful and because we have over 1,500 organizers all over the world, you know, Unify is everyone. Unify is everyone that stepped up and wants to be part of something epic and beautiful that feels the call. And so you can organize an event in your area. You can help by liking and commenting and sharing our posts. There's a zillion ways, you know, whatever you think, you know, your own personal call is to contribute to unifying consciousness on the planet, then do it, you know, and we'll help support. And so that's one of the things we're doing there. In the process of that, we wanted to launch a conscious media platform. There's so much negative media going on. So a fellow named Mark Healy, who is one of the original founders of Unify as well, came together with a guy named Chris Decker, who started Earth Dance, which is a globally synchronized dance for peace. And that's in its 20th anniversary this year.
Neat.
And with that, they founded UpliftConnect.com. And I'm a lead blogger there. So I had a background in writing for the Huffington Post. I did a lot of political stuff in there and wrote about Monsanto and wrote about the TPP. But, you know, it's not really my favorite thing because that stuff's not that pleasant. But somebody needs to talk about it, I guess. But I have the wonderful opportunity to be able to write about the crossover of spirituality, science, art, and health. And so that's what I do for Uplift Connect. I write a few articles a week. Sometimes I get a break for a week or two. And tons of great content there. And I love my editorial staff, Ayana and Azrael. They feed back to me again. It's a collective thing. I'll say, oh, I want to write about this. And they'll say, oh, have you heard about this scientific research that was done about how the brain is affected by looking at art or, you know, things like that, you know. So short articles, 750 to 1,200 words, you know, you could read it in 10 minutes, and very inspiring content to kind of raise consciousness. And we really do our best to just not be like a floofy, you know, new age, you know, light some sage and everything's going to be better, but really back up what we talk about with hard facts, with science, and then also relate that research to very established spiritual traditions, Buddhism or Ayurveda or on and on and on, Chinese medicine. So that's that.
So that's really neat. So you're doing a lot of writing for Uplift Connect. So that's where folks who are interested in what you're talking about can go and find your work.
Yeah, upliftconnect.com.
And anywhere else that you want to talk about?
This I was thinking about when I was riding over for the interview is, you know, what you started doing with the stickers, that was before the internet. You
yep,
know,
that's right.
And so I really, in my mind, I consider you as one of the, what would you call it? You were doing memes before anybody was doing memes. And you weren't just creating memes and sharing them on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. You were turning conscious ideas into bumper stickers and you were getting them out into the world. And that changes consciousness in a beautiful way. And it doesn't even have to be confrontational. And I think that's what's happening on the planet right now, is that there is no one, you know, they use the term silver bullet. I don't like it because I'm not really like a bullet implies like shooting somebody. But I don't think there's one cure-all right now for the problems that we face on the planet. I think that the problems we face on the planet will be resolved through consciousness, through a lot of individuals plugging into a lot of different things to shift the things that don't work in the world and create new things that do work. And your bumper stickers are a big part of that, because you know, maybe I always thought this or that idea in my mind, but it was never validated in the world. You know, I just think, oh, I'm a weirdo freak, you know? And then all of a sudden I'm sitting in traffic and the guy in front of me has a bumper sticker that, you know, that says that. I remember one of your first ones that everybody loved was the God Bless the Freaks. And I love that because, you know, it just really kind of, it was almost like a public way of just saying, hey guys, it's okay to be a weirdo. It's okay to be a freak. It's okay to step out of the box. And it was purple. And, you know, you don't, it was not your average statement to see on somebody's bumper. And of course, you know, other things like patience, positive, just some of them, just one word that you'd see it on a car or on somebody's guitar case or, you know, somebody's water bottle at a festival. And it just, it puts off a good vibration. It makes people feel positive. It makes people feel like there's hope. It gives people a new way of looking at the world, and it combats this disease that we're being bombarded with by the mainstream media that, you know, we've got billboards and we've got commercials on the radio, we've got television, we've got ads and magazines. It's just everywhere. And, you know, all of that stuff is motivated by kind of putting you down. You know, oh, you need this lipstick to be pretty, or you need to, like, you know, whatever, get Viagra so that you could get a sports car so you could attract women. Who knows? You know, it's all of these advertisements are subtly putting us down. And the reason is because they're trying to hawk a product. And by putting us down, then they give us a solution, buy this and everything will be better. And so, you know, on the other end of the spectrum is what you're doing, Jeff, because Root Concepts is putting ideas out there that are about bettering ourselves as individuals, bettering our planet, our relationship with the planet, our relationship with each other. And there is no underlying put down so that you can sell them a product other than maybe your sticker, but that's, you know.
The idea is what sells, right? The sticker is just kind of it's the medium, but it's really about ideas. And thank you for that. You know, I really appreciate that because that is what we've been trying to do for the last 20 years. And I think that the reason why it's been great to, you know, kind of walk this parallel path with you for the last 20 years is because in all of the ways that you know, have just been describing over the last little bit here, that you're doing the same thing. And what I find really interesting is that, you know, you're one of the curators of the Uplift Facebook page, and so you're finding content, you're somebody who's looking for that uplifting conscious content more than pretty much anybody else does. I mean, you're one of the ones who really is having to pay attention to that, like you were saying, do research on it, to write about it. So I know that you're my friend and everything, but it does mean a lot to have you be able to articulate it in that way, because obviously, you know, it's hard work to be able to do that, and you know, you're helping, you know, share some Root Concept stuff on the Unify page and like every now and then. So I gotta, you know, tip my cap to you for helping us do that. And just like in whatever way we can, it's great to be able to, you know, just throw it back and forth to each other and keep the inspiration coming. So really appreciate you being here today, and you know, look forward to seeing what you're gonna keep coming up with. And wonder if you had any closing thoughts or anything else at all.
Well, you know, I liked how you just said they're ideas, and they're not your ideas.
Nope,
you just had the guts to make them colorful and present them in a creative way. And so I love this saying, and I use it a lot when I'm thinking about social media, and it is that we don't own the ideas own us. So if you have this dominant notion of sharing, you have a dominant notion of caring or loving or being compassionate, you know, that idea owns you. You become that. You start to emulate that idea, that intention in the world. So, you know, we don't own the ideas. The ideas own us. And that's why it's really good to look into the ideas that rule your life and make corrections where needed, and the ones that are good, share them with your friends, and that's what I do, and that's what you do. And
that's what we're both doing. Like, yes, Unify is doing that online and doing that in a really powerful way with all kinds of ideas and links going to other ideas. And of course, Root Concepts, like you were saying, you know, we're doing it out in the world, out in on people's bumpers and people's refrigerators and whatnot. So, it's been good. It's been a good ride. We'll keep it going.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me, and I look forward to sharing this with my friends and the people that I work with.
Right on. Thanks a lot, Jacob. Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening and being a part of what we're doing here at Root Concepts. If you were inspired by what you heard, click the link in the show notes and enter your information so we can send you more great messages like the one you just heard. Until next time, this is Jeff Daverman signing off. Thank you for listening. Peace. Thank you.